Is there a slide advancer? Is it this work? No. Oh, that work?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. There we go. Well, it's good to be here at Kent once again to see all your faces, and didn't get to talk to everyone before beginning, before service began this morning, but it's always good to be here and spend this time with you, and hopefully, as always, our few minutes that we have together will be profitable for all of us, especially with regard to eternity. And, you know, at this point in my life, things are going very well. This is the cream of the time for a preacher, you know, and I think of some of my contemporaries, you know, like Jeff and Jerry McDonald and others. You know, they're suffering with cancer and these things, and I mean, I'm just one grateful, thankful man that I'm standing here in, as far as I know, perfect health and mentally and physically, it's impressed upon me how much of a responsibility that I have, that I've been granted these great blessings. And I know that, you know, things can change in the course of a day. But in this moment, I'm just, and always will be grateful no matter what happens. You know, God's will be done. But I'm very grateful and having a great time preaching. The only problem I have is when to shut up. And so my cup overflows, and so I hope that our time this morning will be well spent. This morning, what we're going to be talking about is spiritual life, and we were talking about in class. The question was brought up: how do you know that a person's status before God has changed? Well, this lesson really is an exposition on answering that question. Now, it really goes into it, I think, more deeply. And so, we're going to be talking about the key to living. Bearing fruit. And so we had a reading from John 15, the vine and the branches, and that's really what we're going to be dealing with this morning. And so spiritual life, again, is going to be the main topic of our discussion. Now, back in John chapter 10, Jesus, as the good shepherd, promised abundant spiritual life to those who follow his teachings. There's a passage, for instance, in the book of John in chapter 4, where Jesus is talking to the woman there at the well, and in verse 13, Jesus answered and said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will thirst again." So, get water out of the well, physical water, you drink it, that's great, it'll satisfy your thirst for a while. But then he said in verse 14, "But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him shall never thirst. But the water that I will give him will become in him a well of water springing up to eternal life." And so what we're going to be talking about is this spiritual water, if you will. And as we go into John chapter 15, you'll see the direction that we're going in and how this will all fit together. But this new life that we're going to be talking about has to do with really our perspective. It has to do with the way that we approach life and what life really is all about. It is not about wealth or poverty or health or illness, but what really matters in this life is whether or not we are walking in truth. You may recall in 3 John in chapter 4, as he had addressed this letter to his beloved Gaius, and he said that there was no greater joy for him than to see his children walking in truth. And so that is really what's most important. So we're going to hopefully simplify things this morning and look at life in its simplicity and what it's really all about. And that's going to be our goal. Now, when we walk in truth, we enter into a process. And this spiritual life, this abundant life that we're going to be talking about really is a process. It's a process of learning, practicing, and maturing, as well as failing, recovering, adjusting, enduring, and overcoming. Now, as we come to John 15, we have represented in these words that were read to us this morning the core of Jesus' message to his disciples on the night that he was betrayed. By the next morning, or dusk the next day, should I say, he was dying, nailed to a cross. But the truth that Jesus shared with his disciples on this night that we have here in John 15 led them to a whole new way of thinking. A whole new way of perceiving what life really is all about. A new perspective on what life is about. And really, when we talk about spiritual life, that's what we're talking about. Do you have a different perspective? Do you have a different way of thinking than you did before you became a Christian? Well, to the degree that your perspective has changed in the context of the teaching of Jesus Christ, you have grown spiritually. If that perspective has not changed, you haven't grown at all. Does that make sense? You see, Jesus, according to 1 John 5:20, came to give us understanding. The Son of God has come, John said, and has given us understanding. And so as he has taught us, our understanding, our perspective should be changing and continue to do, really, to change really throughout our lives. But Jesus, the master teacher, was able to get across the deepest spiritual truths to his disciples using simple earthly examples. And here in John chapter 15, he's going to do it again using a vineyard. The vine and the branches, the vine dresser, and how all these things work together. And Jesus is going to use this allegory of the vine and the branches to teach some deep spiritual truth to his disciples. And so, excuse me, and that's so where, is where we're going to be going with him. The last message that Jesus delivered to his disciples before he died, in that message that we're looking at here in John 15, he wanted his disciples and those who believe through their word to comprehend with their whole being that we are on this planet for one compelling reason: to bear fruit. It reminds me of Jesus, I believe it's in Luke 10, with Mary and Martha, and Martha is trying to get dinner ready, and she's cooking, and she's doing all these things, and Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet, and Martha is, "Lord, tell her to help me. I'm doing all this work, and she needs to help me." Daryl Bean's paraphrase. Remember what Jesus said? Martha, Martha, you are busy and worried about so many things. And he said, but only, there's only one thing is necessary. Only one thing is necessary. And Mary has chosen the good part, but that will not be taken away from her. Only one. See, life is very simple. And the older I get, the more that's impressed upon me. It's very, very simple. Because you see how fast it goes. And really, it's very simple. I said that to a 15-year-old this weekend. And the 15-year-old girl, you know, she says, well, it doesn't seem so simple. I said, well, you know, you can't really understand what I'm saying until you can understand what I'm saying. But it's simple. When Solomon ended the book of Ecclesiastes saying, fear God and keep his commandments, okay, the conclusions of the whole matter, when it's all been said and done, here's what it all boils down to. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Only one thing is necessary. Fear God and keep his commandments. Now the rest we can have fun with. We can go to work. We can live our lives and have our children and our grandchildren, and we can enjoy all these things, but we're going to give them all up. It's all temporary. Only one thing is eternal. Is going to determine the quality of our resurrection. And that's what we do with God and what we do with his commandments in this short time that we have to live here. See, I'm already way off of my lesson here, so let me get back to the expounding on these things, right? Any Jew who was familiar with the Old Testament would naturally associate both natural and spiritual fruit bearing with the idea of a vine. You know, in this depiction here of the temple around the border, around the roof there below the triangular things up there, that's all grapevines. If you notice, if you will, over in the book of Psalms, Psalm 80, for instance, in verse 8, there's lots of these that we could find. Lots and lots and lots of passages like this. But he says here, you removed a vine from Egypt. You drove out the nations and planted it. You cleared the ground before it, and it took deep root and filled the land. The mountains were covered with its shadow and the cedars of God with its boles. It was sending out its branches to the sea and its shoots to the river. You have broken down its hedges so all who pass that way pick its fruit. Why have you done that? A boar from the forest eats it away, and whoever moves in the field feeds on it. Oh, God of hosts, turn now, and now again we beseech you, look down from heaven and see and take care of this vine, even the shoot which your right hand has planted, and on the Son whom you have strengthened for yourself. And we can multiply passages. Isaiah 5 is a classic, relating the nation of Israel to a vine, and God as the vine dresser. And so as we turn to the allegory of the vine and the vine dresser, the vine and the branches, what is it that Jesus is going to be looking to get across? Well, if we think about a branch or a vine, the vine is this trunk that grows out of the ground. And from it, the branches go in either direction along the trellis. So Jesus says in the allegory, as he's teaching us about spiritual life, he says, I am the vine. He's that trunk that grows out of the ground that brings nourishment. And he says, and my Father is the vine dresser. Now, the vine dresser's job was to get as many grapes out of the branches possible. And he did that by making sure that the vineyard was healthy and well tended, and that everything was in a condition, was conducive to more grapes being produced from any of the given branches. And so he works with the branches in order to bring forth more fruit. Now we're going to talk about what that fruit is this morning. And we want to be able to ask ourselves, has our status before God actually changed based on... See, and I resisted saying this in class because I would have given away my whole sermon. See? Based on the fruit that we're bearing. Now, an obvious question might be, as we look at this discourse here, or this speech in John chapter 15, why is Jesus going into such detail about growing grapes when he's hours from death? The hopes of his best friends have just been crushed. He has told them, I'm going away. That he has to go. And they are crushed and their hearts are troubled. And in John 16, 22, for instance, we see that they were grieving. So he's about to die. Their hopes have been crushed for a certain kind of a king and kingdom. They had already been arguing about who's going to be greatest, and you know, and they were getting all their plans made, and Jesus comes along and says, you know, that's not the way it's going to be. In fact, diving further in the context of John 15, you find out that, no, they're not going to welcome him as their king. They're going to hate him. And not only are they going to hate him, they're going to hate you too. It's not going to be like you thought. But here Jesus has an opportunity to teach his disciples another way of looking at things. So when we talk about the disciples and is it at this time that the kingdom will be restored to Israel? And we see this hope for this physical kind of a king and kingdom. Remember that in places like this, Jesus was changing their perspective, changing how they thought about things. So let's talk a little bit about fruit and define what we mean by fruit. Now, practically speaking, fruit in this context is good deeds. It is any thought, attitude, or action on our part that God values because it brings him glory. For instance, in the book of, what is it, Titus? Titus chapter 3 and at verse 14. Paul said to Titus, our people, us Christians, must learn to engage in good deeds to meet pressing needs so that they will not be unfruitful. So fruitfulness is here equated with good deeds. Practically speaking, that is what we're talking about when we talk about bearing fruit. fruit that is born as a result of a change of perspective. Now, everybody in this room has always borne some kind of fruit. Before our perspective was changed under the teaching of Jesus Christ, you were bearing fruit. I was bearing fruit. It just wasn't very good fruit. And in fact, Jesus in John 15, or excuse me, that's our text, Jesus in Matthew 7, 15 through 20, tells us that you will know them, as he talked about false teachers and those kind of individuals, you will know them by their fruits. I want to turn right now to the book of James in chapter 3, where he talks about the wisdom that is from above. And he says something about that relative to our theme this morning. He says in verse 13 of James 3:13, who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show. By his good behavior, his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which has come down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So here we have wisdom and fruit bearing that reflects that wisdom. I think of 1 Peter 1 or 2 Peter 1, one of those two. You remember where he says, for this reason also applying all diligence in your faith supply moral excellence, and in your moral excellence knowledge, and in your knowledge perseverance, and in your perseverance self-control, and in your self-control or your self-control and perseverance, and then your perseverance, godliness, brotherly kindness, and love. For if these qualities are yours and are increasing, sounds like a vineyard maybe, huh? Maybe those qualities are grapes. What do you think? They render you neither useless nor unfruitful in the true knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Might have been another passage you wanted to look at there. Oh, yeah. Of course, in John 15, in verse 8, by this is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit. What's fruit? Well, deeds. How you live your life. See? And so prove to be, Jesus says, my disciple. People who are trying to become more like me. The pupil is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he has been fully trained, will be like his teacher. Prove to be his disciples by bearing fruit. And that's how it's done. And so we are bearing fruit when we allow God to work through us to glorify Him. We are here in this world to do the desire of the Father, and that is to glorify Him by living lives that are remarkably fruitful. remarkably abundant lives. That's why we're here. That's simple, but that's why we're here. The older I get, the more I realize that. Now, everybody here that's a Christian is bearing fruit at one of four levels. Some are bearing no fruit. I'm going to turn my text, go back to the text here in John 15 for a moment. Some are bearing no fruit. Now I want you to notice something that Jesus says here. He says in verse 2, every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. If you look, if you study that takes away there, you look at what he's saying there. And especially in light of with someone who knows what it is to take care of a vineyard, the word that is used here, like air with an O, arrow, something like that, it can mean to lift up. And a vine dresser will tell you that sometimes a vine will fall off of the trellis and it'll be laying down in the dirt and in the dust and it can't produce that way. And the vine dresser will come and not cut that one off, but he'll lift it up. And he'll place it, clean it off, and place it back on the trellis where it has an opportunity to get sunlight and to begin to produce. So I don't want you to think that just because a person may not be producing fruit at the moment, that means that God has given up on that person. If we cooperate with him, he can work in us. Isn't that what Paul says in Philippians? It is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. He doesn't give up on us because at a certain point in time, we may not be bearing fruit. Every branch in me, Jesus said. He's not talking about people out in the world. He hasn't talking about people who have been cut off. He says, every branch in me. You're in him, but you're not producing. He's not impatient like we are. No. Human beings are so ready to condemn people, even Christians sometimes. God's not like that. We need to learn that. If it wasn't for God picking up branches that have fallen into dirt, let me tell you something. I wouldn't be standing here right now. Because I've been in that dirt. But he didn't give up on me. And I didn't give up on him. And so, our spiritual fruit, sometimes we bear no fruit, and then some are bearing fruit. So just look at it like you have a basket there next to you, and that reflects the fruit in your life. Okay, and you look in some baskets, they're empty. But God's going to work on it. Going to work on that to try to produce some fruit. Some people's basket has fruit in it, but not very much. So you look in there, you go, well, yeah, look down there, right down there. Shake it, yeah, there's something. You got to look, but it's there. And some people bear more fruit. So some people's basket is half full. You're gonna, that's pretty good. Yeah, yeah. And then others, they bear much. Now there's a whole other aspect of this we don't have time to go into this morning, the pruning and disciplining and those kind of things where God prunes us and causes us to bear more fruit. Kind of another sermon, but that's what happens. And his goal is for us through his methods of bringing it about to cause us to bear much fruit. And fruit bearing shows up. Spiritual fruit shows up in our lives as a change in character and outlook. Because there is no spiritual life without a change of outlook, a change of perspective. And I'm beating that point on purpose. And bearing fruit and glorifying God becomes our source of greatest joy. And that being the case, if your outlook and my outlook has changed, and it's a process, as I've mentioned earlier, and our perspective changes so that it is really true that my source of joy in this life has nothing to do with outside circumstances as far as my health or my wealth, but just am I bearing fruit and glorifying God. If that is the case, and I've come to that place in my spiritual life, how could I possibly be satisfied with a half-empty basket? How could I? How can you? And I hope that question makes sense. You know, not only is God glorified by our lives as we bear fruit, but even people who have chosen to be God's enemies and remain that way until the end are going to glorify God because of your life. That's why Peter in 2 Peter something, I'll say 3:12, I think that's wrong though, but you'll know where this is. But he says, as beloved children, abstain from fleshly lusts, or I urge you as aliens and strangers, abstain from fleshly lusts, which wage war against the soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, amongst the enemies of God, so that, okay, keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, as they did in that day, they may, on account of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. The day of visitation in that context may have been the destruction of Jerusalem, maybe the end of time. Whichever one of those, it really doesn't matter for our purposes. What does matter is the enemies of God are going to glorify God, and they're going to remember what they saw in you. And even not in such a negative context, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, let your light so shine before men, you can all finish that, right? That they may see your good works and glorify God who is in heaven. They can see your fruit. And there's a wonderful passage in the Proverbs, familiar, I'm sure, to most of you, where he says in Proverbs 11:30, and you think, just picture this, the tree of the righteous, excuse me, the fruit of the righteous. The fruit of the righteous. Now we understand what fruit is, right? The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. What did the tree of life do? What does that symbolize in the Bible? Life, eternal life, everlasting life. Your fruit, the fruit of the righteous, is a tree of life. And he who is wise, remember James 3, walking in that heavenly wisdom, full of good fruits. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he who is wise wins souls.
people observing you.
You think about what Peter told a wife in 1 Peter 3 whose husband was disobedient. Remember what he said? That those husbands may be won without a word, he says to the wives, as they observe your chaste toward God, respectful toward your husband, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Here's a person being changed because of observing behavior, observing fruit. So it is not just, although it's everything, that we glorify God by our fruit, but we also bless men by our fruit. And I'm going to mention this just because the last time I preached this lesson or a version of this lesson, people came up to me and said, Daryl, thank you for not saying erroneously that bearing fruit has only to do with having Bible classes with people and converting people. No. That's a form. That's fruit. But that's not the only thing involved. You know, if you have that ability and opportunity, then you do so. But I have a feeling there are, in fact, I more than have a feeling, I'm saying that facetiously, I know because I have heard the testimonials over the years that there are a lot of Christians today who became Christians primarily by observing the lives of people that were Christians. And they were drawn to Christ because of people's lives. And don't be cynical, that can still happen. And it still does happen. See, now I want to go into Isaiah and, you know, and his word not returning to him empty, but I don't have time to do all that this morning. But I'm doing it anyway, right? So look, in the Bible, the word fruit, as we start winding down, is used to describe, in fact, I think I have a slide here. Behind. In the Bible, the word fruit is used to describe a person's outward actions that result from the condition of their heart. That's why Jesus said, you will know them. Not what they say, not, you know, you will know them, the person, the real person, by their fruits. You can talk, you can hide, you can do all that stuff all you want, but you cannot hide what kind of a tree you are. Not for long. And our message this morning is one that says we have a privilege, an opportunity laid before us to glorify the God of heaven by the fruit that we bear. We could go into the parable of the sower and the soils upon which the seed falls. Some of it falls on calloused hearts, the closed mind, no fruit, none. Some of the seed falls on the casual heart, the cloudy mind. Falls and it takes root for a little while, the sun comes out, times of persecution, no fruit. Or maybe we could call that short-lived fruit. There's some, oh no, it's gone. And some of the seed falls on the choked heart, the cluttered mind. So worried about this and that, the riches, the pleasures, the worries of this life. What's that going to matter? And I told this 15-year-old girl, I was down in in Arizona this week and visiting with Eugene Baldwin, who's got just a few days, you know, left in this world. And I said, you know, Brother Baldwin here, he's not worried about what his job was or how much money he made or anything. The only thing that he's concerned with, the only thing that matters to him, did he fear God and keep his commandments? Yeah, one thing. That's all. And we need to be careful, Americans. Because we have a tendency, because we have so much abundance around us and so many distractions, to fall into that choked heart. And we look at our basket of spiritual fruit and there's not much there. Got a lot of other kind of stuff put our time and effort into. We just need to be careful with that. Because we want the seed to fall on the converted heart, the committed mind. That's what we want. And so, says the preacher in closing, what is fruit? It is good motives, desires, and attitudes. It is spiritual virtues, words, and deeds, all springing from faith in harmony with the law of God and done to his glory. That's fruit. Jesus wants us to bear much fruit and glorify the Father. So John here, this goes kind of on and on. The secret of living is bearing fruit. This secret of bearing fruit is abiding. This secret of abiding is obeying. And it just kind of goes on. So I just broke you off a little piece. But let's leave here this morning determined. Let's look in our basket and ask ourselves, am I bearing fruit? Much fruit for God. And just in leaving, if you want to know if God is pruning you so that you can bear more, just ask yourself, where does it hurt? Where does it hurt? What is that thing in your life, that attitude, that action, whatever it is in your life that you know needs to be improved upon? Maybe something needs to be discarded. Whatever it may be, there's change that needs to occur in your life, and it's going to hurt you to give it up, and you know it. That's where the pruning shears are. And you submit to that pruning, and you work and cooperate with the vine dresser so he can continue to improve you, refine you, cultivate you, to produce as much fruit as possible and prove to be a disciple of Jesus Christ and inherit eternal life. Thank you so much for your attention this morning. I had a great time preaching this lesson, and I hope that you got something out of it that's going to be of eternal value to you. So think about these things very seriously as together we stand.